This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
It's done. There's it to Jared McCann. Left wing into the Vancouver zone. Drops the shade right. He scores. A hard wrist shot from the top of the left circle. Beats Thatcher Demko. Glove side again. And it's 3-0 for the Kraken with 4 minutes left in the middle frame. And here come the Kraken 3-on-2. McCann left wing. High slot to the right circle. Burakovsky scores. Thatcher Demko couldn't get to it. Burakovsky wide on the right wing. Fires it into the yawning cage. And it's Seattle 4 and Vancouver nothing.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Ty Karchuk stood up by Garland at center. He passes rink wide right wing for Adam Larson. Made a move around Hughes into the Vancouver zone and scores into the empty net. Adam Larson nets his 7th of the year to extend the Seattle lead, and the Kraken go up 5-0.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks, on an evening, they seem to accept their fate, lose 5-0 against the Seattle Kraken at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar will bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650, and hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It really looked like this was a night the Canucks really accepted their fate. And it wasn't like, you know, I mentioned this before, and Vikingstad was texting in and saying, like, you know, it's funny you say, like, at least they were trying. Tonight wasn't they weren't trying night. Tonight was a night where they couldn't go above and beyond with their effort, and they simply didn't have enough juice as far as talent and real ability. To me, it was a you're not a good enough problem tonight more than anything else, and also lacking spirit, because it seemed like they understood that it was not going to happen for them this season.
Yeah, it felt like after that 1-0 goal and then Jake DeBrusk giveaway, it felt like they're climbing Everest at that point, right? Where you know you're up against it, you get, you know, that gut punch, and you can say whatever you want. Yeah, hey, Seattle didn't have high danger chances, 5-on-5, but the fact of the matter is, you know, how do you cope when you get smacked in the face that first time? You make that mistake, are you able to be getting back in that game? And they simply didn't have it, guys. You start looking at some of the key mistakes they made. I mentioned the Jake DeBrusk one, that 2-0 goal. Thatcher Demko was caught cheating, right? Like, he's way too much room on that left-hand side. And then also on top of that, you know, he's very deep in his net. A little bit later on, you get caught on a change and transition yet again. 4-0 goal, you know, there's, at that point, you're just overreaching. You're trying to get offense, so discipline's not going to be. But the first three goals of this game, I just felt like, you know, after that 1-0 goal, they lacked that juice completely. But in that first period, they had their opportunities. They had a couple of minutes to kick off the game where they had the legs going a little bit.
Power plays.
They drew two power plays. You can't get it there, and that just killed their confidence.
That first 16 minutes, and we chatted in the first intermission set about it was a very low event, 5-on-5 period.
Yeah.
And you have one mistake near 17 minutes in the period, give up the goal. But everything about that was low event, in control, yep. And I thought it was a connected defensive performance because it was low event. After the goal and through that second period, a lot more individuals trying to make plays. Even the Demko goal, the moment that you talk about on the second goal, Sherwood makes a pass to Joshua. It doesn't come off. No big deal in the slot. But Sherwood jumps after Vince Dunn, who's already being checked.
Yeah.
And Vince Dunn just sends a pass up, and it's a 3-on-2 the whole way out of the defensive zone for Seattle. We can talk about the right goal. Garland trying to overdo it in the offensive zone. Turnover. Vince Dunn rips it around. Easy entry, easy goal. That just started stacking up. Forbert, like, he got away with a moment earlier in the first period, a bad angle shot that whipped out of the zone. Does it again on the 4-0 goal. Bjorkstrand gets the easy opportunity. 3-on-2 rush the other way. On a night when Rick Tocchet was talking about we want to be the counterattacking team, they got counterattacked to death tonight.
Yeah, they were shredded, guys. 75 shot attempts, I believe, for Vancouver, 39 for Seattle. How many of them were missed nets? 27 missed nets. And a lot of that comes down to launching the counterattack, right? Are you taking a disciplined shot? And a couple of those moments went back the other way. And Seattle didn't have many chances, but the ones they got, they delivered on, plain and simple.
And they're rush opportunities, right? Yep. And it's a version of the Kraken we saw years ago that propelled them into the playoffs and obviously get a first-round upset. But you played right into their hands through the course of the night, and I'm still, like, trying to figure out who Jake DeBrusk was trying to pass to on that Asamont goal.
Yeah.
But it's that. It's taking harmless moments and creating them for your opposition for very harmful goals against.
And two of those moments were created by Vince Dunn, where he identifies what's going on. You mentioned the one with Sherwood, where he's saying, all right, two players coming towards me, I'm going to make the play up the middle of the ice, boom, and they end up scoring. But even later on, the hard rim, where he basically identifies Vancouver's changing, and they've got numbers going the other way, same thing there. You give this Seattle team, and I know they're not a good team. They're not a team that has, obviously, a playoff designation, but the fact of the matter is styles make fights, and their style is not pleasant to Vancouver, and they took advantage of that tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the pace, you can see. And honestly, like, some of those goals on Demko wasn't his best night either.
Yeah.
But maybe this should have been a game they should have lost 1-0 or 2-0. Maybe not 5-0, but at the end of the day, you know, to me, you know, I see people texting, and I get it. They're like, you know, not enough spirit from the Canucks tonight. Chris from Calgary saying, you know, they shouldn't look like they've given up. I get it, but like they should be playing a lot harder than they had in this game. They have to work so hard to generate, especially when you don't have the natural talent in your lineup. You have a couple of big absences as well up front. And it's one thing to generate, and you're playing with belief. You're playing with, like, our season's on the line. We have a chance in this playoff race. And as soon as you lost that game against the Jets, and you see what happens on the out-of-town scoreboard too, right? Like, you know that you have to win 8 in a row. You know it's going to be impossible to do, essentially. To me, like, I didn't feel good about things when I heard Dakota Joshua talk about we got to win all 8.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about 8. You got to think about tonight. And, like, you're already thinking about how hard this is going to be. So how hard is it for you to get to those loose pucks? Tonight, a lot of shots from the outside, but they didn't get to the pucks enough, right? They didn't get to the inside enough. They didn't work hard enough to do that extra little thing. And that, to me, comes from a lack of spirit, which comes back to you're probably resigned to your fate. And that's not to make excuses for them, but in a game that they all talked about, like, we have to have this game 7, they really didn't have a laid-on-the-line performance.
Well, everything was in front of Seattle, right? Like,
yeah.
We look at the block shot numbers, 27. Everything was there, and you can give credit to Seattle for a couple of big penalty kills. I think Cartier had a couple of key blocks. But, guys, it was everything that was pretty slow for Vancouver. So I think, you know, we didn't necessarily see this team attack with confidence. And part of that is not having that talent in the lineup, having that juice, having that high-end talent, that game-breaker that you so need this time of the year. But, you know, in the middle of the ice, early on in this game especially, Joey Decord popped out some very, very juicy rebounds, right?
Yeah.
There was one from the Tyler Myers shot from the right-hand side. You have a couple of middle drives there, and you're able to at least ask questions, but they just weren't there. They felt like the timing was like a second off for this team, especially even early on in this game where, you know, it was low event, Bic, but there were still hints of, okay, wait a second, if they keep this up, they're going to be able to do something. And once that 1-0 goal went in, it felt like that fell off the map.
It was a huge struggle in that first period because, as you mentioned, there were rebounds, whether it's on the power play or 5-on-5. Like, from soft danger, low danger plays, moments in front of the net, but how many of those actually converted with the secondary opportunities? Even in the second period,
yeah.
Besser has one at the top of the crease, doesn't really navigate the space to get a shot off. It was a theme of the night that, you know, second chance opportunities. Do you have the hunger to go create the next play? And, you know, Stat, you used the word toothless to me during the second period,
yeah.
And it just felt like that way.
Well, what was the best chance of the night? Was it Drew O'Connor shorthanded?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that tells us a lot, guys, right? We're 5-on-5.
Oh, no, to me, that one and also the Nils Åman chance after the Myers shot goes off the court, hits the boards, bounces forward.
Yeah, but that wasn't even a shot on goal.
I'm just saying he just missed it, but like that would have been a tap.
Fair enough.
But that's not that's like off a lucky bounce off the boards, and that's their maybe second
best
chance.
It's either that play or a shorthanded. But
yeah.
That's my point, though.
No,
5-on-5
yeah, there's
and
no
power play. And, you know, the power play is a different conversation altogether. I'm sure we'll get to that.
Well, Linus Karlsson had a rebound chance in the second period. That was 5-on-5.
Yeah,
but
there you go.
But yeah.
We're talking 2 or 3.
Yeah, yeah. And how did what are these chances? One was, you mentioned, being down. The other one's like going towards the net and
but
bounces going your
also,
way, getting it, and that's it, or not getting it.
You said Drew O'Connor shorthanded chance. You said Nils Åman's off the boards. I said Linus Karlsson's chance.
Yeah.
How many minutes of those three guys total, right? Like, who are we talking about here?
Yeah.
We're talking about Linus Karlsson, who played 11:30, Nils Åman, who played 10:17, and Drew O'Connor, who played 14:36.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about tonight.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I saw nothing from Brock Besser tonight, saw nothing from Connor Garland tonight, outside of setting up Drew O'Connor on that chance short-handed and gave the puck away in the offensive zone a few times. Kiefer Sherwood a couple shots, but, you know, it is what it is. Teddy Bluger took a penalty, only played 12 minutes tonight. Atu Ratu wasn't making the same impact. Jake DeBrusk, I mean, I'm still wondering, like you mentioned, what he was thinking on that giveaway to Esimon on that first goal. So it's just, you know, no offensive push from any of your top guys. And you saw the frustration in Quinn Hughes slamming the door, breaking his stick. And he played 27:45. And the only reason he didn't play 30 was because the game was out of hand towards the end. And as far as the end goes, we talked about this last game, and people were texting in, too, is that you guys are making a mountain out of a molehill.
Oh, my goodness. Don't even get me started.
So they didn't pull the goalie when they were down two goals with 54 seconds to go with an offensive zone faceoff. Now, they were down a man, but they didn't decide not to pull the goalie against the Jets with two goals down. They're down four goals tonight with 5 minutes to go, and they pulled the goalie. Hey, I applaud. Do it, man. Your season's on the line. Like, you're down four. Like, pull.
Why now,
care.
Not last game, right?
I'm just curious, right? So last game, to me, it looked like we mentioned that was like Tocchet kind of waving the white flag. He didn't wave the white flag tonight, but like, you know, that was kind of
consistent about it, right?
No, like, I mean, I'm okay with him going for it, but
but
it shows you,
not do it last time, but then do it this, like, there's no consistency to it.
It makes you wonder, like, again, like, why did you not do it? I think it was just frustration in the moment, but
frustration in the moment, or just a human moment of like, oh, another too many minutes, whatever it was, but like. The job is to be locked into those moments to extract every potential to try to get a point or 2 points.
Yeah.
What is the consistency in decision-making? Like, what is the pattern? Like, what is the criteria to make these decisions when you're not doing it in one spot and the next spot you're doing it? Like,
in fairness, like they've generally been aggressive with it, because even going back to the Winnipeg game, they pulled the goalie with like 4 minutes to go almost again too. Yeah. Like they have been aggressive. They pulled the goalie without having entered into the offensive zone. Like they've been in it before. That's why it was so strange why they didn't do it last game against the Jets. And I don't want to spend the time about the Jets. It was just, again, like, because people brought it up. It's like, who cares? What, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, you guys are making something out of nothing. Well, if it doesn't matter, then why pull the goalie tonight when you're down four? It's just, you know.
Without hearing the coach's comments yet, the only thing I can say is last game he didn't think it was the last stand. Tonight he thought it was the last stand. Right? Like, honestly, and we can disagree with it, but I do wonder, psychology-wise, is that where it is? Where you're saying, hey, no, we got a shot. That's fine. We're not going to go all in here. We're not that desperate. But tonight was it for some reason. Tonight was at 4-0. That was the moment.
Every point is just so valuable. Even if you don't come back to win last game, do you force over? Whatever it is, but
it wasn't going to change the
you're
outcome.
You're telling me 4-0 with 4 minutes to go is any different?
It's not.
Or worse than down two with a minute?
The logic. It was a departure, and that's why it was curious last time. And it doesn't matter. Viking stat says Tocchet pulls a goalie tonight. Almost felt like, here you go, media. From the previous game. I mean, there was...
He was listening to the post-game show, that means.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, there's a lot of reaction. A lot of reaction on a text inbox about what happened this season and how it did go wrong, and there's so many other things, and I think that all gets conflated. As far as... I don't want to do a positive, but I thought the player who maybe showed the most spirit tonight was Elias Pettersson, the young defender who got into a scrum through the body. He was very aggressive with the puck. He also
had a backdoor play that he
wasn't afraid of cheating backdoor.
Six shot attempts.
Yeah, weak side. They talk about the weak side defender going crashing down, creating and being an outlet, and he did that. He was very aggressive tonight, got into scrums, got towards the net. I liked what I saw from Elias Pettersson. To me, he looked like a guy who was very engaged tonight.
Yeah, I think with the edge, we've always seen it. We've heard about that as well. We're starting to see that at the NHL level, like the fact that he went after Newman there and just tried to flex a little bit. But, you know, remember, one thing that we got to keep in mind here is that internal competition, right? Rick Tocchet was asked about Mancini today and who would be playing on that right side of defense. These guys, despite, of course, the playoff push and the last hopes for that, there are certain young players that are trying to get in the lineup. Doesn't matter how many games are left, 7 games are left. They want to be in the lineup. And I think Elias Pettersson has shown that game in, game out, he can be a player that you can rely on. Now, we'll see when Mancini gets back in the lineup. But with Elias Pettersson, I like the ability of both of these defensemen, both of these young defensemen, to show something offensively. Whether they're scoring goals or not is one thing, but Mancini has also shown opportunities where he's cutting inside and, you know, he's in a position to show you something and carrying the puck. But, guys, you know, I think the edge, the physical edge, of course, Elias Pettersson's got a little bit more snarl to his game, and he showed it tonight.
And that's an exciting part of it, right? Because he's still a very young player, obviously, right? And coming into his NHL career, and I'm excited to see what the future holds from as he grows into his body too, because he's has a physical engagement and he's just a pop still in the NHL.
Yeah.
He's got natural size, but he's going to fill in even more when he gets to be 23, 24, 25, and that's when you can really see some physical prowess come out for him.
I'm curious also, like, what's his comp, right? Like, there's some nasty defenders, of course, that have, you know, maybe a little bit offensive upside, but, you know, is there a guy that we look into the future just to say this is who he could be? Like, he's not a guy that throws the body recklessly, although if you ask Nazem Kadri, he might say, hey, this guy's got a pretty good, you know, hit as well. But, like, you know, when you say 24, 25, I'm curious to see what how much of a snarl he's going to have, how much of physicality is going to be in his game. So, exciting prospect, nonetheless.
Yeah, exciting prospect, and it's become a season now where we have resigned ourselves to look at the future. And
you're not getting the simulator ready, are you?
I mean, hey, I've been trying to avoid it. The team has faced the music.
Sam Cosentino's on your show tomorrow, isn't he?
And he might be. I'm just saying, if the Canucks are facing,
I know.
Music,
hey, listen, the percentages speak for themselves, guys. Yeah. What heading into this game, it was 6.7%.
It was over. It was over. Honestly, like, we joked about this too, but like when Pedersen and Hoglander went down, I said they're cooked. It was over.
Yeah.
It was over then. It just took a while to get there.
Well, this is not the time of the season you want to have a 3-game losing streak.
No.
Plain and simple, right?
Yeah, and hey, listen, they're just not good enough right now, especially with the absences, right? And even so, we talk about them needing more, but it is what it is. Randy, great stuff, man. Look forward to seeing you on the weekend.
Yeah, I got a rare Saturday with you guys.
Let's go.
1 p.m. puck
1
drop.
1 p.m., yeah. So. Well, I mean, you get to so essentially you get to work from, like, what, at 11 until midnight tomorrow?
I'm taking the Toronto-Columbus game off, so I'm going to be doing the Calgary-Vegas one, so they're just a quick turnaround. I can't get to the studio in 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know.
Have you tried?
I don't know if my crew will be happy with that. The rest of the folks, they might be a little like, where is this guy with 5 minutes to go?
So maybe he'll just be the second hardest working guy in media.
I'll try my best. But it's a brunch time, so is the Canucks brunch producer Lena going to swing over some brunch? Like, what's going on here? You got a certain reputation to uphold when you host that show, Lena.
Lena, are
you
working?
Well, Josh could be here.
Yeah, Josh could be too. Yeah, one of them.
Are you working the game Saturday?
No, it's Josh. I'm working the Sunday game.
Okay, so
all right, Josh Elliott Wolf, we expect brunch on Saturday.
He does often eat waffles, so
yeah, he's a waffle guy.
He's a waffle guy, not a pancake guy.
He may bring some waffles over.
All right, Josh,
he waffles a lot. I heard his take. She loves 7 of 8 games, and then on Central, he's like, yeah, you know, I get it.
He's
a waffler.
He's a kid, you know.
Everybody come hungry.
He got pancaked a couple times. He just has to, you know, work.
He's the DPD of 650. He's like, he's still gonna grow into his takes.
Yeah, it's all right. It takes time. We all have to, you know, get our reps in. Randy, great stuff, man. That is Randeep Janda, and that was your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Sport, where rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll grab your phone calls as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, Bic, and it is very varied, and we'll do our best to hit some of the bigger picture comments and texts people are sending in, because I know we can't separate those things right now, especially when it comes to the young players. But this one says, Corey from GP, this team needs a good kick in the ass. Hopefully next year they will do better. That's Corey from GP, Alberta. The season was over in December when the Canucks lost to Seattle with 5 minutes left in the game. They were up by 3. That's when I realized this team didn't have the chance at a postseason. That's Dave from Strathcona. And Bernie from Kelowna. Boy, for a team that's supposed to be playing desperate hockey, the Canucks are desperately trying to lose. Pretty sad display. So a bit of everything in the text inbox.
Yep, absolutely. And also a lot of love for the Abbotsford Canucks. 11 in a row.
11.
And now they've clinched their spot for the AHL playoffs as well. So.
Maybe we should call them Baby Blues, not the Baby Canucks.
I see you working. Or maybe they needed to drop one. So the Blues, there's some sort of cosmic linkage between the Blues and the Abbotsford Canucks right now.
Maybe there's some sort of, like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I was going to say something.
Sat's big into quantum physics. He's like, you know, if you go into the string theory.
I was going to talk about quantum entanglement, but I'll leave it. We don't need to get into that. Tyler says, will management get in front of a mic and answer for this terrible season? They gave home fans terrible returns. And, you know, we talked about
there will be an
end-of-season
press conference.
They always have it. And it's coming up before you know it. I mean, it's only 2 weeks left in the season. It's coming up really soon here.
Final game of the season, April 16th. So,
literally 2 weeks from now. Yeah, literally 2 weeks from now, but shortly thereafter, you'll hear it. And tonight was a tough game in front of the home crowds, right? Six-game road trip. You come back home. And, yeah, there wasn't a lot of excitement because, you know, we were all resigned to the fact that the Canucks, weren't going to be a playoff team here. And tonight was just not a great showing for the fans again. And there have been too many nights like this at Rogers Arena, and this has to change for next season.
Yeah, 100%. We're talking about a team that's 15, 14, and 7 on home ice this year. That is one of the lowest marks as far as home wins throughout the course of the year. Chicago's got 14. San Jose's got 12. I believe those are the only teams lower than them because the Eastern has been okay on the road. Yeah, just Chicago and San Jose.
Yeah,
that's really, really grim for home paying fans.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
As somebody tweeted at us, the reason he pulled the goalie tonight, not the other night, was because it was home fans.
I can't give up in front of the home fans, right? I suppose so. This text: the game was a perfect summary of our season. Absolutely nothing went our way. Tough to see the lack of effort from the boys tonight. Faces on the bench near the end of the game said it all. Our season is quickly coming to a close, and that's kind of how a lot of fans feel on the text inbox. We'll get to more of your thoughts here coming up in a little bit, but let's go to the phone boards and we'll start things off in Delta, where we have G on the line. G, thanks for calling in, buddy. What do you have for us tonight?
Good evening, boys. So I became a Canucks fan when I was in elementary school. That was during the West Coast Express era. And during all these years of watching hockey, one thing I've learned about this team is whenever they're in a tight playoff race, they are not going to make it. It happened in the season after the lockout. It happened in the Luongo sophomore season, the Tortorella season, Boudreaux season, and now this season. And my frustration just lies with the management team, right? You have this extensive management team that you were boasting about a couple of years ago. And for them to forego trading Besser, forego trading Pius Suter, and to the tedious methods that they accumulated cap space with, right? I know this topic is beaten to death. The tedious method with which they accumulated all that cap space and to do nothing with it, that's like me telling my kids, you're not getting a birthday gift, you're not getting a Christmas gift because we're saving up for a spring break Disneyland trip. But when spring break comes, I take them to Playland instead. Anyways, this is so frustrating. What a joke, man. I'm done.
Hey, G, thanks for the phone call. And honestly, that was a pretty good analogy.
That was awesome. That was I'm curious where he's going to take it. It was like,
yeah,
poor kids need a Christmas gift.
But yeah, and you know,
pulled it together, G. Nicely done.
We both started almost laughing.
Yeah, that was
and
great.
Not because I don't want to start laughing on air because, you know, he's passionate about what he's saying, but that was –
excellent analogy. That was unreal.
That's a great analogy.
I'm going to write that one down for 3 o'clock tomorrow.
Vic's already written it down. I see it. It's in a spreadsheet of stolen takes. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's go to Langley.
More like Bic Cage. I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Bic Cage. Jeez. Nobody in Rogers Arena is safe. Let's go to Langley, where we have our friend Jake on the line. Jake, what's happening, bud? What do you have for us tonight?
As long as they don't give me on Christmas those ugly Grizzlies Canucks combination collab sweaters and hoodies, and my God, those are pretty rough. That analogy cracked me up, honestly. That was really funny. So huge props to that guy. But what do I think about the game? I'm pretty apathetic to it. The fact that this is the biggest game of the year, really, if you think about it, if they lose, they're pretty much done. And they not only lost, but they got they got killed, right? It's 5-0. So they just don't have the guns right now. There's too many injuries. There's too much drama that happened this year. And, you know, it's not meant to be. You know, sometimes it's like you can say, oh, maybe there's a chance. It wasn't going to happen from how the trade deadline happened and how the management, or should I say maybe even ownership, kind of stopped a lot of things from happening. Who knows? I'm not there behind the scenes. But that's just kind of how this season is going. But let me ask you guys a question. You guys always ask me. Let me ask you guys a question. This offseason, maybe it's too early to talk about it, but isn't it kind of nice to go into this offseason that our defense is pretty much set? Because Pettersson played really well tonight, and you know, Marcus Pettersson's been all right, and everybody else is pretty much set. So isn't it nice that we're looking for wingers for once? Like, when was the last time, assuming Brock doesn't come back, that we're just looking for just straight-up wingers the whole offseason? So, and I guess a center as well. But yeah, what do you guys think? Thanks.
Hey, cheers. thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. That's our friend Jay calling in. And some positives, like, about – he's not wrong about the defense. It is set. And you also have a lot coming from
– don't get too attached to some guys.
Sure, of course. But I mean, as to that point, like, the defense is set, and the defense could also be the key to you making your team better in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
Because if even if you bring forward back or not, like, you don't need to bring a defenseman back in outside of a depth guy, perhaps,
yeah,
a veteran to have for depth, or whether that's a Juleson type or a forward type, and we'll see if even forward does end up coming back. But you're set on the back end in that sense. And you have a lot coming. You have Vilander coming. You have DPD. You have Mancini. These guys, two or three of them, will be on the team next year. You have Kudryavtsev. You have Cole McWard. And Sawyer Minyu's coming. And these guys have shown a lot of promising signs so far for the team. You feel good long-term and short-term about their defense. Goaltending, at least for next year, you're not worried about. Demko and Lankin, and that's your tandem. It's the forwards. And to the point Jake makes, it's easier to find the wings than some of those other players. But outside of finding a top four defenseman, a center is pretty close on the list. And that's going to be the big one. I think you can probably find a couple wing and get past it and get by, whether that's keeping Besser. The big question is, can they find another center that can push maybe Hedl to the wing and have somebody else play that role? But that's going to be the big question. Can you find another impact forward?
And there's, you know, we've chatted, I know you guys have chatted on Canuck Central as well with Reach, that is there like a convert player and a Hedl, right? Because he doesn't feel like he has the defensive chops to maybe stay at center, certainly not in the Rick Tocchet system. So is that a winger potential player,
yeah,
as well? So that would solve an issue too, as far as just another body. And he's got offensive chops, obviously. You see the way he carries the puck, and he can certainly rip the puck as well.
Yeah.
So that at least would be a potential solution. But look, they're going to go into the offseason with a big hole at second-line center. And I know Pugh Suter has done a very credible job. That's not a solution at second-line center. It's nice to have within the organization, if they retain him, to have a guy that's as credible as he is. But that's not a second-line,
yeah,
center.
No.
You need someone that's going to be pushing 70 points to be in a second-line center spot. At least that.
Yeah.
Let alone the standard the Canucks fans have seen here with either JT or Elias Pettersson running shotgun, whatever it is. You need someone that can, A, play heavy minutes, consistently put up 20-plus goals consistently, and also be a playmaker, someone that can create for others.
Yeah.
It's a tall order that what they're going to have to do this summer.
There's a lot of work, right? And it's not going to be easy. They have to thread a needle, and they probably have to be pretty bold doing it. So a lot of action. I mean, the Canucks were pretty on ice, pretty boring for much of the season. The drama and entertainment really came off ice a lot this year. And perhaps it could be an entertaining and eventful offseason as they try to reshape this roster, especially the forward group, to make them far more dangerous than they have been. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to hear from the Canucks head coach, Canuck players, more from you, and we'll give you more analysis of a tough 5-0 loss on home ice against the Seattle Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show
on the official home of the Canucks,
Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
John Hayden, who fires it quickly up the left wing for Michael Essiemont, tied up by Hronek. Great play on the back check to prevent him from getting a scoring opportunity. And Jake DeBrusk to center gave it away to Essiemont, who scampers back in on the left wing around Hronek. Essiemont in on goal. He scores! Michael Essiemont gets the goal for Seattle to give them a 1-0 lead, his eighth of the year, and the visitors lead with 3:18 left in the first after the Canucks failed to manage the puck in the neutral zone.
Essiemont's been very prominent early in this game, and it looked like he had a great opportunity originally, but Filip Hronek did a good job of bumping him off the puck, shouldering him off, and then right after that in the neutral zone, a pass by Jake DeBrusk that goes to nobody. It's a little drop pass, but Michael Essiemont, number 21 for the Seattle Kraken, picks up the puck, has a step on Filip Hronek, and goes 5-hole to beat Thatcher Demko to make it 1-0 Seattle. But Jake DeBrusk, Doing the skate of shame after that one. Knew he gave away the puck too easily there.
That's a game-winning goal. The first goal, only one Seattle needed, but go on to win 5-0 over the Vancouver Canucks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. If you want to grab a phone line, you can do so as well, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Before we go to the head coach, Bick, let's rattle off some text. A lot of emotion in the text inbox here tonight. And this is a common refrain. Stu brings this up about would there be a possibility of shutting down Hughes for the rest of the season.
A lot of talk like that. Yeah,
there was one as well from David asking about that, and I think there were a couple others, so if I missed it, apologies for not grabbing your name too. And a lot of people texted and asking about shutting Quinn Hughes down. I think we're getting close to it. Like, he doesn't look quite his self. Like, tonight he tried, he did everything he could, he was effective for the most part.
So correct me if I'm wrong, they can't get an E next to the name until Monday. Right?
Yeah, the Canucks currently have, what,
two
seven
more games
remaining?
So two more games this weekend. Minnesota and both St. Louis, I think, play two games by Sunday.
Canucks can still get to 95 points.
Yeah. So you need them to get –
You need to get them to 95.
Until that E goes next to that, they're not going to be shutting anyone down.
Yeah, I think it's getting – you're getting close to it. I think you're getting pretty close to it. I don't know if the team is there. Would I like to see them maybe get ahead of it and for them just – I mean, listen, they played like – they're resigned to their fate tonight. So if that's how you're playing.
Yeah, maybe it changes the picture.
You know, that's kind of how
but like
how
we talked about, just because there's so many home games here, are they going to remove a guy?
Yeah, six home games remaining. And that's, as much as that probably seemed really good before the season, about, hey, have a bunch of home games towards the end of the season, hopefully another good campaign. And it's been the opposite so far. But, yeah, I mean, the Canucks are still three losses away from this being over. Or three wins away from the Blues and the Wild. So they're not going to be eliminated until the very earliest Sunday.
Yeah. No, I think.
Well, even longer. Sorry.
Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah,
next Tuesday.
It'll be, next week.
Next week. So that's not going to be there. But after the weekend, like they're one loss on the weekend away from accepting that.
I believe either the Wild or the Blues play on Monday. So I think that's the day.
Yeah. Wild and Blues both have 89 points, they play 76 games. One more game than Vancouver. So, yeah, the magic number for elimination is three more losses or losing six more points.
Yes, it's the Blues that play. They have three more games until Monday. So there you go. Monday, if the Blues win three in a row, Canucks lose two in a row, Monday would be your exit point.
So we're almost there, but yeah, I'm not quite sure they're ready to shut it down. Andrew in Newfoundland says, as cliche as it is, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
This unsigned one, maybe not the maximum effort, but definitely maximum Canuck. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Gus from Niagara Falls. Guys, I got hit by the indifference bug. Just don't care anymore, and I know many fans feel the same way. We won't win a cup while the current ownership grooms owns the team. We have one decent season every 4 to 5 years. Thank you guys for doing the show, giving us a platform to voice our opinions. Gus in Niagara Falls. We've got a lot of texts like that. So I read that one there from Gus in Niagara Falls. So everyone has taken it here. Like when we talked about this before, because Ian in Rosslyn asks, curious question, who is ultimately responsible for the state of the team from game seven last year to missing the playoffs this season? And when you go from there to here, there are a lot of people that are responsible, and I think the entire organization wears it. It goes top to bottom. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of how it goes when this happens. A lot of it does fall on players ultimately, but also just like all the turmoil that they went through. And some of it obviously is also the injuries. Some bad luck has been a part of it, but the blame is probably shared across. I'm not sure there's one smoking gun. I know people want to point the finger at management, and that's fair. I mean, hey, listen, management has to take it when the team struggles, and they're big boys. They can handle it. They understand it. But I think a lot of fans want management to be held accountable. I'm not sure everyone wants them to get fired, but that's where a lot of it is being directed. It's above the players. It's above the coach.
Yeah, and they're going to be facing a lot of tough questions at the end of year media availability, right? Their first one, it was all rosy, and they started to open the door on the Boudreaux conversation at the end of that year, but it was still okay. Like, hey, they're allowed to bring in their own coach, allowed to build it their own way. And then you see that kind of scandalous stretch of what happened with Bruce. And then in comes Rick Tocchet, and it felt like it was going to be shaping up towards a very difficult end-of-season presser. Well, they have that nice 33 games. It's like, okay, well, maybe this team is kind of turning a corner and give them a chance to kind of do it their own way. And then you see the success of last year. It's like, all right, they're trending in a direction. This end-of-season presser is going to be the toughest one that they've had to face.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what kind of plan they kind of outlay for the fans to kind of agree with, disagree with, whatever it is. But there's got to have to be some sort of direction pointed out, and they're going to be facing some pointed questions as well.
Yeah, no, and I think that's fair, and I think that's just what you have to do when a season goes the way it has so far, that has this season. Tommy from Sydney, now in North Van, says, Washington from a lake house in the Okanagan. All I will say is, thank God for the wine we bought, because it made it bearable.
I'm glad you enjoyed that one.
Yeah, good one there, Tommy. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bick?
650. Again, Jeremy in Abbotsford on a brighter note. Abbey Canucks, 11th in a row. What a year for the boys in God's country. That one's from many of those coming in as well. 650. But yeah, a lot of commentary on just tonight. Just no push. Delta Mike saying that was just embarrassing. No pressure, no push, no power play. And to top it off, that was probably Demko's worst game since his return as well.
Yeah, and similar sentiments from Matt and Delta. This team is cooked for this year, guys. Shut down Hughes and get ready to reload for next season. I was at the game. They did not look good at all, being outplayed by a Seattle team that's worse than them in the standings. Management needs to put some serious thought into this team going forward. Matt, frustrated at the SkyTrain station, texting in. And yeah, Drew in Port Moody also said, Canucks are cooked. That's the similar sentiment you're getting on the text inbox. All right, a lot of thoughts from you. We'll get to more of them here as the show goes on. We'll take a phone call here, too, before the head coach. Let's go to Lions Bay, where our friend Jose is on the line. Jose, good hearing from you, buddy. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, Seth. Hey, Bick. First of all, I mean, guys, obviously disappointing with a pretty embarrassing loss today. But to be honest with you, and I think I even called in when I was in Mexico, the season was over from my perspective, like a couple of games ago. I just kind of had a feeling it's done. Two things as I kind of reflect as priorities for this team next season. Number one, I really believe very strongly that something needs to be done around chemistry and veteran leadership on this team. You know, like great examples tonight, like this was do or die. This was game seven in overtime, you know, according to Rick Talk, and look what happens to the team today. And, you know, when I look back at this season, one of the things that really kind of made me realize what's a big challenge is when you had JT Miller and Elias Pettersson both wearing A's as part of your leadership group, I think you got a problem. I really strongly believe the Canucks have to address culture and leadership. You know, you look at Rick Tocchet, you know he wants to look at players in the locker room who want to win. And I think the Canucks have that, but I think they need to bring in some guys who've actually won a cup, guys who can actually help the other guys, the younger guys, show the way. So that's a priority from my perspective. The second, and guys, it's the power play. I mean, you know, the power play once upon a time was top 10 in the NHL. If you recall, even the top five, top seven. I remember when Newell Brown power play, Jason King coached the power play. Last two seasons, not good, man. And you know what? They've got to fix that. And Rick Tocchet, he's talking about trying to fix it, trying to actually generate more offense. I mean, they could have used some offense tonight, guys. Anyways, always good to hear you on the radio. Back to you.
Appreciate it, Jose. Thanks for calling in. And, you know, I think we're getting a lot of that, too, about, you know, the season was lost a lot earlier. And it was. I mean, anytime you're in a position where you have to play catch-up towards the end and you have no margin for error, like, it's probably not happening for you. You know, and and you know, people text it in too, and they're like, "Well, you guys were still talking playoffs." And it's like, yeah, I mean, because they're still in the race. Like, we have to talk about what's going on with the team, and the team was still selling as far as like, their messaging. It's like we're trying to get in, we're doing everything we can.
What they're trying to do is still get to the playoffs.
Yeah, so we're talking about, hey, this is the path. These are the things that you have to do to get there, and these are the games that you have to play. And we have plenty of time to dissect the season as it goes on. But yeah, this season was lost long ago. There are a lot of losses that you can look at and situations earlier that brought them to the position they find themselves in now. And as far as Jose's point about leadership, it is frustrating that we find ourselves back to having that discussion about this team. We were having these conversations about this team 2 years ago about maturity, lack thereof, and finding guys that have the right attitude.
Country club, that was a term that was echoed a couple of seasons ago.
And I don't think that there's the country club feel now. Like, I don't think that's what's going on. It has changed. It is different. And it's not like, again, you know, the Canucks have given up on the season and they haven't tried this little while. I mean, they've been working and giving it what they have. Tonight, like Hockey Mom and Gibson's mentions, like, they just looked like a team that had nothing left, like emotionally spent and physically spent and exhausted from everything they've gone through. And understanding how hard it is, I think reality set in, I think, when they got back to Vancouver about where they are. It finally set in, and they look like it here tonight. But it is frustrating that we're sitting here and talking about they need to find other guys on the team that have fight in them, that are leaders, that can bring a team together, especially on the higher end of things. So something we'll watch out for here in the offseason. We'll get to more of your reaction, but let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach, and let's go to the podium. Brought to you by Tiletown, here is Rick Tocchet.
Given the stakes and the fact that you guys are kind of running out of lives here, how disappointing was what happened tonight?
Yeah, I think that early on, saw a lot of nervousness. You know, we had a couple power plays where you need some poise there. I didn't think we had some poise, and then they got a couple of quick goals on us, and you could see guys were getting nervous, chasing the game. I mean, you know, I think we had some guys that really gave some effort, but I didn't think we had a lot of poise tonight.
How tough is it to continue to believe? I mean, when you play in these must-win situations, it's got to be emotionally exhausting and to still believe you've got a chance when the math is bad.
Well, I mean, you got to believe in yourself. How do you, you know, if you're struggling as a player, you got to turn your game around. So you got to believe in yourself. Plus, we got a bunch of young guys. You owe it to them to keep pushing. And you just keep pushing. But, you know, like I said, you know, you got to, I know it's the same old thing coaches say, but you got to keep getting at it, working at it. But there's some plays there and some poise stuff that we gotta, you know, we just gotta relax in certain situations. The intensity, but relax. There's plays there, and I just think we're not finding them, you know.
You mentioned the power plays early on in the game. Obviously, a goal there would have made a big difference.
Yeah.
What do you need from that power play? Right?
We were just looking at it. There's just plays there. There's a low play twice. There's a low play wide open, but for, you know. We pass to the flanker and he shoots it, gets it blocked. I mean, there's just certain things you just gotta, you know, but these are reps and you gotta stay with it and, you know, hopefully it pans out. But I just saw a lot of nervous guys on that power play.
I saw no Tyler Myers for the last 12 minutes. Any update on
him? Yeah, he got banged up. There's, you know, he wanted to keep going, but we shut him down at that point. So he'll be evaluated.
It's a little unusual, 5 minutes left, down by four goals. You pulled the goalie for the extra attacker there. What message are you sending there? What we've heard you in the past say, like, the players need to earn a goalie pull.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the players earned that goalie pull tonight?
Well, you just try to, you know, you're looking for who's giving up, who's not, and I want to see, you know, who knows? You might need it on, what do we play again, Saturday, a 6-on-5 goal. Like, you might as well do it. So, you know, why not? That's the way I look at it.
You know, Quinn, whatever percent he's at, you know, you get 8 shot attempts from 27 minutes. I mean, is there a statement there for your younger guys and what he's able to bring right now?
Who's that?
Quinn.
Yeah, no, it's like everybody, you know, you're trying to progress. I don't know, we have 76 shot attempts. A lot of missed nets, blocked shots, the same old story. We just, that's where the poise is, you know. You know the guy's going to be in front. You got to fake it, go around, and then shoot it. Like, these are the poised plays. 76 shot attempts are, I mean, I like it, but you'd like to see more result-oriented when you get some attempts. I thought we missed the net again. Shot location's a big thing. We've talked about being able to shoot somewhere where the goalie might give a rebound instead of missing the net and starting to break out. So this is but that's poise. We got to keep working on that stuff.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their 3 locations and talk to their in-house design consultants or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. And that is the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after the game. And, you know, pretty short for home availability. Talked about nervousness. Didn't have poise with the pucks. In his opinion, there were plays they could have made, but they weren't finding them. And that's pretty much it. And mentioned they owe it to the young guys to keep pushing. And he kind of went through his reasoning about pulling the goalie versus not pulling the goalie being down and referenced the Columbus game. Didn't really say anything about the last game in Winnipeg. Yeah, he was asked did they earn it tonight, and his answer just didn't really answer it cleanly.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that answer again if we can just grab that, Eddie, at some point later tonight. I wasn't sure if he was talking about Columbus or if
he was Columbus. He said 6-5. It was Columbus. He's like, the 6-5 goalie pull, that's what tied the game for them.
Is he talking about, like, practicing 6-on-5? I was
he was talking about the game coming back. You pulled the goalie, you came back, and, like, you know, give him a chance or whatever. Like, he was talking about that, I'm pretty sure. We can play that back coming up in a bit later, but...
That was a weird one. But, yeah, like, he poised. Sounding like Kramer talking with the Kramer from Seinfeld, the Miss America. You need poise.
Yeah.
No. A lot of poise.
Yeah. Okay.
Conversation.
Eddie has it ready. Here's the answer again.
Well, you just try to, you know, you're looking for who's giving up, who's not. And I want to see, you know, who knows? You might need it on, what do we play again? Saturday, a 6-on-5 goal. Like, you might as well do it. So, you know, why not? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think he's saying, like, we might need it on Saturday. So, like,
no, I meant Saturday 6-on, like on Saturday 6-on-5.
No, he says we might need it on Saturday. I think he means this upcoming Saturday.
Need what? To pull the goalie?
Yeah, I think he's talking about, like, getting reps on that spot, which is even more puzzling.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
bizarre.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
I don't know if that. I don't know. I don't think the answer was very clean. Let's just put it that way. So
it was kind of like tonight.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much showed what it was. No, we don't need to do it again. Thanks, Eddie. We're going to do it again. absolutely nothing but excuses is what K-Man says, texting in. Burke from Victoria, talk at transcript. Dry cough, poise, dry cough, intensity. dry cough, goalie pull. That's where the poise is. So, and I'm not criticizing him. I'm just... trying to figure out the reasoning
thing
behind
about
it or whatever.
But the poise is the one that obviously stands out. And it's all the missed shots, right? And it's been referenced so many times this year. And again, we talked about a handful of guys here tonight that had shots that were blocked. Quinn Hughes had 7 that were turned away. Kiefer Sherwood had 4 that were turned away. Tyler Myers taking 5 from the point. Jake DeBrusk had 4 turned away. Philip Peronik had 5. Knocked away. It totaled so much. Connor Garland with 4, and all these guys we're mentioning, they're the guys you're looking to produce any semblance of offense now. It's Hughes, Garland, Myers, DeBrusk, like all these guys that are getting the minutes too, and they weren't able to convert chances. And also a couple of references about the power play, and we talked about too, like the best moment they had was like a DeBrusk high slot tip that came from a Quinn Hughes play. But there was a moment that they tried to engineer that classic bumper play that we've seen Bo Horvat be in that spot for so many years. They tried to do it with Lekkomäki and Besser, and they rotated, and they got it to Besser low, and he looked like he was going to go to DeBrusk, and he just fumbled the puck, and so he had to go back out wide to Lekkomäki, and that's what kicked off the sequence to Hughes back into DeBrusk for that tip. But, there were moments where, whether that's poise of handling a puck or having some confidence to actually make that play, that there was fleeting moments at attempts to do it, but obviously they didn't come off.
No, they didn't come off at all, right? And I think that's part of a big problem with their power play. The 3 opportunities, especially in the first period, just didn't even generate enough chances. You mentioned the DeBrusk, tip, and just about pretty much it. And there was a Sherwood chance off the rush, I think, and that was pretty much all they really generated on the power plays. As far as the text inbox goes, I mean, we're talking about where the season has gone and where it's at. Asima brings up the overtime losses. If they had just 1 half, what a different season this would be. There are a lot of things you can look back at, right? Colin from Caribou says that coach 100,000% means might need a 6-on-5 this Saturday, so that's why they're practicing it. So
that's
Mike
that's
from
like puzzling,
Mike from Surrey. It sounds like Talkett has given up on the interview, like the Canucks on the season.
It's doing my head. Just trying to think about
it.
Although I might be having some reaction from an earlier moment in the booth. I smacked my head against
You did. Bick gave himself a concussion. He was laughing at something, and he kind of doubled over and then smacked his head against the chair.
Yeah, that was a
rough
moment.
Bick might be concussed.
Yeah,
CTE Bick.
Just trying to figure out that line of logic from the question that's doing my head in.
Maybe that's making it a little bit harder for Bick to get this. we'll get to more of your texts as the show goes on. I wanted to get this one in because there's been a lot of this about direction-wise for Vancouver, and Irfan says, my question to you is, aren't you sick of this team just trying to make the playoffs? Don't you want them to just be the cup contender at this point? People are sick of just making it into the playoffs and then nothing more than that. We need this team to be contend, not just make the playoffs. This is not the year to even go for it. I mean, we've mentioned this before, like, obviously you need to be a cup contender. Coming into the season, this team wasn't a Tier 1 Cup contender, but they were in a position that if they could add a defenseman to JT and the group that they had, you could at least get close and be in the discussion. Like, we talk about the league this year, and it's like three or four really good teams, and then you have five or six other teams that could do it. I think the Canucks, if they were able to build on last year and add a top four defenseman, they could put themselves in that discussion, which is far higher than where they were. But after making the JT trade, the Canucks lost their ceiling. The reality for this team this year was, at best, you're a playoff team. That's just a reality for this season. But let's not forget that coming into this year, all the conversation was around, how does this team win a Stanley Cup? How do they get over the hump? And we all said, hey, decent offseason. They did a lot of good things. They can build on what you can do last year. But they obviously have to upgrade the defense at some point. And they did, but it came at the cost of JT because that entire situation fell apart. But coming into the year, the conversation wasn't, is this just a playoff team? The discussion was, can they be a cup contender? So let's not forget that that was the entire conversation about the offseason, is how do they become a cup contender? The reality where they find themselves now is they're far off from being a cup contender. And I want them to get back there, but you have to be realistic of how it's going to look and how long it might take to get there. And all this is obviously heightened by the need to get certainty over Quinn Hughes' situation long term, so it becomes more acute in terms of it has to get fixed soon.
Plus uncertainty over, hey, do we have a number one center here?
Yeah, because of what happened with Pettersson.
And you've made a huge commitment, financial commitment, to this player, and you're going to need a resolution on that. Is that someone that's going to get back to a certain standard?
Yeah,
that you can trust, and you're basically going to have to jump in 2 feet on spec. This is not like, oh, look, things just went wrong this year, and we know you're going to get back to a game. There's huge levels of uncertainty, of trust, it feels like, that this player is going to reclaim his status to earn a $93 million contract. It feels baffling to say, but that's a scenario that they're existing in right now. Do they have a level of trust that they're going to get back to it and that they're ready to say, hey, if we can't find a solution external, you're part of the solution here? A lot needs to get worked out between now and July 1.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But, I mean, I hear this a lot, too. It's like, we're talking about making the playoffs this year, and, hey, it's good to get into the playoffs, but that's just the reality of the situation you find yourself in. It's not an endorsement of the process. Even if they made the playoffs this year, it wasn't like, hey, guys, what a season. The Canucks went from, you know, winning the division last year and being a contender to this year just squeaking into the playoffs. But still, there's still value in getting into the playoffs, and there's still value in playing hockey. Guys can learn from it, and maybe you win a round, maybe you push into the second round even farther. Like, who knows? You're not winning a cup, but you can at least gain some experience from it. That's better than not making the playoffs. But that's not an endorsement of, like, hey, great process, successful season.
And it should be pointed out, two rounds won in 14 seasons.
Yes.
Yeah. In difficult. 14 years.
Yeah, and one of those rounds was also
a bubble year.
Bubble year.
Yeah.
So not a real playoff, so to speak. Because even, hey, we're saying that now. Patrick Alvin and Rutherford have all said, like, Rick, hey, Tockett, that was Rick Tockett, that wasn't a real playoff.
Yeah.
So that's how they view it.
It's essentially, okay, if you want to put it that way, it's one round won in 14 seasons. Yeah. If you want to remove the bubble playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, you have to take a sizable leap forward next season. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to your texts, some of your phone calls. We'll hear more from Canuck players. And we'll see if we get iMac in before 11:30. It might be tight, but we'll figure it all out on the Canuck Central Postgame Show. Plus the 3 stars brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Find them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Vancouver's on the penalty kill, but Drew O'Connor breaks up a play at his own line, allowing Connor Garland to skate left wing into the Seattle zone in front for O'Connor with a one-timer. He's robbed by DeCord. A great shorthanded chance for Drew O'Connor from the right circle, but DeCord comes up big with the glove to keep the game scoreless.
And what a play. First coming down the left-hand side, Connor Garland waits for the last second as two Seattle players are drawn towards him and sets up Drew O'Connor all by himself, trying to go top corner. Glove side on DeCord, but what a reaction by Joey DeCord to make that save.
Joey DeCord comes up big, shutout for the Seattle Kraken. Canucks lose 5-0 on home ice, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, Sat and Bic on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. We'll hear from the Canucks captain, Quinn Hughes, coming up in a bit as well. You know, the Canucks gave up 5 goals tonight, and you know, we haven't spoken about it a lot, but Bo from Burnaby says Demko looked tiny in the net today, lost his position a few times. Demko, Besser, Joshua really need a healthy summer. Bo from Burnaby texting in. I don't disagree about Demko. And
I mean, name the player that needs a healthy summer.
Yeah, no kidding, right? And Demko has looked really good since coming back from Four Nations. But you know, we don't have to break all the goals down in detail, but they essentially all came off the rush, Bic. And
all four.
And how many of them did he look deep in his net? Mm-hmm. Like, 2 goals were identical, corners being picked, the Chandler Stevenson goal and the Shane Wright goal. And the first one, of course, was like on a break after the DeBrusque giveaway in the neutral zone, like we talked about. But everything was off the rush on Demko. And usually, like, he's pretty good at those, and you don't have to save all of them, but he just couldn't find that save tonight either.
And, again, they're moving the goalie on a couple of them, so it makes it a bit more challenging. But yeah, I wouldn't classify some of these as the classic high dangers. The Ace Mountain one, yes, he's coming in on the rush and it's close. But, you know, just the way we've seen Thatcher Demko make saves – The Stevenson one was like alarming and shocking. You and I both looked at it like, wow, that one went in.
He didn't look set either. Yeah. He made the point that it was a cross ice feed that came across. You got the goalie moving a bit, but we know Demko's usually a lot more in control than those.
Especially when he has time to square up to the shooter. Like there was enough time to get square to that shooter, but you are still moving.
And he was trying to protect the post, but even when you watch him against the post, he's kind of off. Like he's leaving space between the post and himself. Like it just wasn't a clean. It was a clean movement by Thatcher Demko on that. And the Shane Reichel, very similar too, just kind of comes down the wing. And that happened after Garland had the puck in the offensive zone. It's 4-on-4. And that's the thing that was so infuriating about that goal. You have the puck in the offensive zone, and the next thing you know, you just give it away. And then they turn it around from under the goal line
and
up
changing,
the ice.
Yeah. Right? There's a host of issues. Should we just get through the goals?
We'll just do that goal there. I mean, we essentially did it. We don't have enough time. Bick wants to do the goal so badly. Like,
no,
we don't
I
have
just,
enough time.
It's fine. That goal, yeah, like, again, Garland's got it in the offensive zone, just a mishandle, plays it around, gets it back, and loses it again to Adam Larson. And, you know, heads-up play by Vince Dunn just to recognize Canucks are changing because they're on that end. It's the second period. And just hard rims it all the way around. And then it's just McCann drops it to right, and he pivots on the puck and just is able to turn into it and get a shot right to the top corner.
Yeah, and then it was Andre Burakovsky putting it away. Jared McCann getting another assist. Jared McCann, a pretty big night tonight.
Three assists tonight for Jared McCann.
All right, and that leads us to the 3 stars for tonight's game, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Shop Angry Otter Liquor's 3 stars, beer, wine, and spirits. And the 3rd star of the game is
Vince Dunn.
2 assists on the evening, 21:05, and 2 shots on goal, and just very much in control. Made a couple of really nice heads-up plays.
Just clever plays, right? We talked about the one there on the right goal, or just the recognition change, and just is a guy at the far blue line, hard rim around. But even the Stevenson goal, like he had pressure, invited Sherwood on top of it, and then got that pass up. And it was a 3-on-2 from inside their own blue line. And it gets kickstarted by Vince Dunn.
Yeah, and the 2nd star of the game, and you can say death taxes, and Jared McCann having a big night against the Vancouver Canucks. 3 assists on the evening, and he is your 2nd star.
Jared McCann, 35, 36, 37th assists on the season, and looked threatening, and nice work on the Burakovsky goals. Well, actually, both the right goal and Burakovsky goal, because he has that draw pass, cuts to the middle of the ice, takes a body, and then the Burakovsky goal, you know, cuts to the middle of the ice, puts Ratu kind of in a bind and still gets it to Burakovsky for basically an empty netter.
Yeah, and the first start was the guy who got the shutout. Didn't talk about him a ton, but Joey Decor, 25 saves, and he was like Velko tonight. He ate up a lot of pucks, didn't give a lot of second chances, and the second chances he gave up, he squared up and made saves. So got to give Joey Decor a lot of credit tonight.
Big moments, right? The Drew O'Connor save, shorthanded. If the Canucks get on the board early, how does that change the complexion of this game? And it's not as if that first period that they're you know, power play, there was a moment, and shorthanded. If the Canucks get one, how does that change the complexion of the game prior to the Asamoah goal? But he turned it away. And you mentioned, like, Velcro. Like, I'm stunned he was able to hold on to that one. And if there's a rebound laying there for Drew O'Connor, does he make it 1-0? And he was strong throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, he really was. And he just strong performance, and you know, it showed he can be worth the money signing that 5-year deal, which has kind of become the template for a lot of contracts, including Kevin Lankinen's $4.5 million 5-year deal, which he signed with the Canucks a few weeks back.
The high end 1B guys.
Yes.
And $4 and change, $5 million.
Yeah. And those are your Angry Otter Liquor 3 stars of the game here tonight. All right, we'll take some phone calls. Let's go to Tyler, who's calling. Tyler, log away. We lost Tyler. So, okay, so let's go back to the text inbox. This one here says, do you guys really think it matters that the Canucks have fast players? O'Connor is fast. Very noticeable his first few games. It seems like he's been programmed to play talk-it hockey, and now you don't notice his speed. I still notice his speed. Like, I notice his speed. I notice what he can do. He's not a consistent offensive producer. And, you know, early on when he came in, it's like, you know, a lot of explosiveness, a lot of adrenaline, and he did a lot of good things. But he's essentially a third, fourth-line player. That's what he is. He's getting paid $2.5 million. And I think if you're expecting guys like that to make an offensive impact every game, that's just not going to happen. Like, he is what he is. And I think the size, the speed and the size is still good. I want him to be more physical at times, and there are things I want to see him do a lot better. But I think you need more speed, and he has at least helped him in that regard.
Yeah, he's basically scoring at his normal pace.
Yeah.
He had 6 goals and 53 in Pittsburgh. He's got 4 here in Vancouver.
Had 16 last year.
23. Yeah, he's got 16 last year. It's not a... Again, that's kind of what you're looking for. It's somewhere between 12 and 18 goals. That's basically what Drew O'Connor is going to be. If you're expecting more, I warn you, you're going to be frustrated through that. But, you know, just given the minutes, he's going to play, you know, 13, 14, 15 minutes. And it's going to be energy roles. And he flashed early. Again, was that just a mini hot streak? It's hard to say, like, this is a guy that's going to project to be a 20-goal scorer. He's going to play in his role. You want him to be fast, and he is effective. He plays with good angles on the forecheck, and the length really plays, too. I do like the way he keeps his motor running while reaching, and then the length really starts to influence defenders. But the physicality, I would love to see that tick up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to see him stop on pucks a bit more. Like, he'll fly by, try to not fly by in that sense. Like, he'll try to make a puck, but play on the puck. But he won't just stop where he needs to stop sometimes, and I think that's something he can do better. But, yeah, I do think the speed still does play. As far as the Canucks captain is concerned, we mentioned thoughts from Canucks captain Quinn Hughes. Here is Quinn Hughes' post-game meeting with the media.
Yeah, obviously not the result we wanted.
Not necessarily a ton of urgency in the first period. It seemed like by either team, it felt like a fairly low event game. Are you surprised given the stakes for you guys?
I mean, I think our effort's been there for the most part, and thought we had a pretty good road trip as far as tonight. Obviously, not what we wanted to see, but have to look at it tomorrow and get better.
3 straight losses, you know, at a time where you can't afford any. How tough is it, given the math? You know how long the odds are. Is it tough to believe?
I mean, it's not tough to believe just because we're in it, and it's the reality, so... as far as that, obviously, you know, everyone's looking at the standings daily and knows, you know, what the percentages are or whatnot. And so, yeah, we know where we're at.
Guys are mentally tired from the chase.
I'm not going to comment on, you know, guys being mentally tired or physically tired. I think that if you went around the league, everyone would say that they're mentally tired if, you know, especially the guys that played at Four Nations. So I don't know how many guys on our team we have, Lincoln and Petey, and that's really it. So I don't think there should be any excuses for that.
But is it tough when you're playing what feels like a dozen game sevens in a row where the stakes are that it's that tense and intense for you guys?
Chris said it's just a reality. I mean, if you ask the St. Louis Blues if they're mentally tired from playing game sevens every other night trying to win, they've won 10 in a row, so they're not using that as an excuse. They're just playing good hockey.
Canucks captain Quinn Hughes after the game, and didn't want to get into any of the we've given up talk or, like, you know, this is over talk. He's still very
much. But also laid down a bit of a marker. I was like, there shouldn't be any excuses. We didn't have guys really go out to Four Nations.
Well, I mean, they had Lankinen.
Yeah.
But Pettersson when he's not there.
Of the ones that are in the lineup tonight, it was
yeah,
no representation from Four Nations
he
guys.
He looked very frustrated today. Tonight.
Yeah, there's the moment at the bench. Did he smash a stick or slam the gate?
He slammed the gate. I couldn't tell. Like, there was a broken stick on the ice.
There was a broken stick. I don't know if the cameras caught that one, but it did look like he either slammed the gate or broke a stick at the bench.
It sounded like a slam gate and then a stick smash. That's what it sounded like. And we looked over and saw there was a stick laying. So we saw the evidence
after
the
fact. We saw debris everywhere.
And I was like, okay. Yeah. Was it Quinn or not? I couldn't tell. But
he was at the bench. He was taking off his glove. And
then he was frustrated. You could tell. Yeah. You know, people left him alone. Nobody would look at him.
Yeah,
like
trainers
mad.
Came over and all that.
He's just like, yeah, I'm not going to talk to you guys.
We saw his last absence, and we talk so much about, you know, core, oblique, whatever it is for Quinn Hughes. Like, dealing with a hand issue throughout this year, like, it has been a huge year for injuries, obviously. You know, you start with Joshua, then you get Demko, then you get Besser, then Miller leaves, then you have Hughes, then you have Hronek, then you have Pettersson, then you have Hughes again, then you have it's on and on and on, and it's a testament to the season Hughes has had. At the same time, even though this is going to end in disappointment and all these things, like the type of season he's had with the ailments on top of it, it's been really incredible. But yeah, like I think you can sense the frustration of what the season has been for everyone.
Yeah. This text, it's not tough to believe because that's the reality and we're in it. Bro, this guy gets it.
Gets it. Yeah, that's...
I suppose. This text, yeah, all the Canucks have are 15 to 25 goal scorers. Yeehaw. Yeah, and they need to get the guys that can score more.
That is part of the conversation, too.
They have to raise, yeah.
Yeah, because we got some texts with, like, what do you do with Besser? What do you do with Suter? One thing that I do consider is if you look at some of these players individually, in isolation, in a vacuum, like, yeah, this guy's a real hockey player, like a real NHL player, deserves to be in the league. And you start looking at this guy and you say, yeah, he deserves, or he's worth this much. Yeah, it makes sense to pay him that much. And you do that and you do that and you over and over and over again, and suddenly you've got 16 players. And you're like, wait, where's our difference makers?
Yeah.
And you go through this line. Like, you can do that. Like, Besser, we've talked about the contract, and whatever contract he's getting, he'll have earned it. And you can look at that and say, yeah, like, you can make a case for him being an $8 million player. You can make a case for Pugh Suter being a $4.5 million player. You can make a case for Drew O'Connor being a $2 million. Like, on and on. Connor Garland, four and change. You can do that a whole bunch of times. And I like most of these guys. Like, they're worthwhile NHL players, but then you step back and you say, I don't know if I need 16 of these guys.
Well, like, that's
kind of the problem.
Well, that's what, you know, somebody was asking us too. David was saying, what if you move Garland to make money for Suter? I think, okay, if you're signing Suter, you kind of have to subtract somebody.
I think one of the biggest equations I've thought of here recently is, I don't know if there's a reality where you can live with two of the three of Besser, Garland, Suter.
No, you can't have all three.
No, like I don't think you can have two of three.
Of them. I mean, fair. I don't think that's unfair necessarily. The thing with, I think Garland, it's easy to say move, but I don't disagree. But the one thing Garland does that neither of those two guys do is drive a line
independently,
and not a like. I don't think you're a contender if he drives your second line. Mm-hmm. But if he's driving your third line, I feel pretty good. It's like last year, you felt good about if that's your third line, like that's mm-hmm. a pretty good third line to have. So I like that he can do that. Suter can fill in. He's a Swiss Army knife.
Because he's Swiss.
And so he can do a lot of different things for you. And he can score. And I think he's shown he can play in your top six in the right situation. But independently, he's not driving a line.
And also, if he's your third line center, you're still going to want certain guys on that line to bring speed.
Yes.
To bring physicality. So, independently, he can be a nice stopper-style player, but he's not heavy. He's not fast. So, you need other things with him on that line. It's not independently doing it. And so, we got these texts like, got to bring Brock Besser back. And not the worst idea. I'd be for it, but where's the change? Like, where's the upgrade going to come?
Well,
you can't dedicate $8 million to Brock Besser, but now you're going to still come back with Connor Garland.
I don't want to do the math. But if you sign Besser and Suter, like, you have to move a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money. It's not just like one contract. It's a couple of contracts you got to move out. And I think, you know, as far as somebody brought this up, like, you know, where are all the people that said the Canucks don't need EP40? I thought some fans told me we don't need him. How come nobody's saying anything about him, about missing him tonight or not missing him tonight? And I think you can create some offense and have some good moments for a little short time. And Yannick talks about this all the time, that when star players go out, the guys down the lineup for 5 to 10 games can you know, get adrenaline, can seize the moment, and they can do it, but they can't sustain it. And that's what we saw. And it was nice to see, but it wasn't sustainable. So right now, you don't have $11.6 million in Pedersen in the lineup. You don't have $4.5 million from Filip Hedl in the night lineup. That's $16 million. Now, this year, Hoegh-Niner is making $1 million, but next year he's making $3 million. So for all intents and purposes, you're talking about upwards of $19 million worth of talent that's currently not in your roster for a team that's already short on scoring and short on talent up front.
And routinely, there's about $16 to $20 million not in the lineup this year. Whether it's Miller absence, paired with a Demko injury, Besser out, Joshua's not coming back. It's happened frequently. Hronek was missing. It's happened frequently this year that they've iced lineups and they're short $16 million.
Yeah, and I think that's a big problem. And that you do that for long enough, and it catches up with you. And I think that, you know, it has in many ways caught up with this Canucks squad. We'll see what happens this offseason. We'll see what happens with Pedersen ultimately. But to your point about Garland and people asking us about moving Garland, I'm like, okay, you want to do it? And Gurnour already has a package. He's like, Garland in a first for Tuck and Norris. I doubt that you're going to get Tuck and Norris for Garland in the first. But maybe some tongue-in-cheek from Gurnour more than anything else. But if you're moving Garland, you have to also find somebody that can run your third line. So, and I get it. Your third line shouldn't be the biggest thing you worry about, but, like, you're lacking drivers as it is. Can this team truly afford to just, like, bypass a guy that can run a line when you don't have anybody? Like, consistently, game in and game out. And I don't love his game recently. And I think that Garland's a guy that's probably playing through something as well, and giving it everything he has. And I think that explains maybe how far his game has fallen recently. But can this team that lacks play drivers truly afford to trade away a play driver to keep a non-play driver?
Yeah, it's fair. It's fair.
And I'm not the biggest Garland fan. And no. I even said this, you know, guys couldn't believe it on Canuck Central. I'm like, but let's be honest about things. Like, we talk about we need somebody to drive lines. Can you afford to move a guy that actually drives a line?
But also, it's just so many bodies sat. Like,
I don't disagree.
We're talking about Sherwood. We're talking about Joshua. We're talking about Drew O'Connor. Then throw in Hoglander. Already, like, I've just named four probably bottom six, middle six.
But here's the point. The point I'm trying to make is, like, this is a very difficult puzzle to get right, because you're either moving something like you're either saying, hey, we're not bringing Garland back, or you're saying we're not bringing some other goal scorers back, we're not bringing Besser or Suter back. So if you don't bring those guys back, it means you got nothing for them, right?
Yep.
And if you move Garland to keep those guys, now you lose a play driver. But you kept guys. Now, at least you're getting value for Garland.
Yeah.
But you still have to solve that problem of who's running. You know, you need three lines to be good in hockey. So how are you going to solve that now? Every move you make creates another hole with your forwards. And if you don't keep two guys to give yourself that space, there's going to be a lot of anger over why you didn't maximize the assets, especially when you're sitting here in game number 75 and you're not in the playoffs. So I think that's going to lead to a lot of that frustration about there's no perfect answer here. Like, you're kind of taking a risk, or you're plugging your nose one way or another.
Yeah, and you've heard me use this phrase too of, you know, what fascinates me more is sequencing of moves, not necessarily the moves themselves, because one domino topples the next one. You get an indication of where they're starting to go. So I'm going to be very interested once we get to June, like, what's the first domino? Because I think we'll get an indicator then of as much as we can talk about all these options that are laid forth here and what doors open and what doors close, that first one is going to be really telling. If they sign Brock before July 1, then, or, you know, before the draft, then you're going to get an indication of, like, what part of the frustration you might experience. If you're a Garland fan, if you're not, does a Brock signing point to some bigger changes? And, you know, we chatted earlier about some surplus guys, too, and they have a probably one surplus player on the wing.
Yeah.
But the other surplus areas that they have, left defense,
yeah,
and goaltending.
No doubt.
There's surplus there.
And I think the defense is, you know, what you're looking at. Who's that going to be? Ultimately, we'll find out. But you have to give something to get something, and you have to give quite a bit.
If you're in a world where you're already giving up a first-round pick, right? So one first-round pick probably puts you in the Marcus Pedersen-level player, right?
Yeah.
Second liner or top four. Second pair D. Right? So you want to start adding to that. How high up the level do you start going? And, you know, if you want to talk about a team that just acquired JT Miller, what'd they essentially give up? A first, second, and a third, right?
Yeah.
A make weight contract, whatever it is. But essentially, it's a first, second, third value, basically. So just play that game out. Okay, you want to attach a first to get a $7.5, $8 million player. You already got the first in there. What's the second that you're attaching in?
Well,
is it a prospect?
Yeah, but the thing is, you can do, if you do say a DPD, that's probably a second and a third combined. You probably feel like him as a prospect, he's a late first round pick. So I think if you're willing to do DPD in a first, you're probably in a pretty good market.
Yeah. So you might have to flirt with that idea if you want to go make it an impact splash.
Are you comfortable doing that or not? That's going to be the big question. And it's funny how, you know, the struggles this year have really changed people's perception of a lot of players. And that's fair, because when a player struggles, yeah, it makes you question, and losing makes you question everything, every reality. But Niels from Seashell says, PD has proven time and time again not to be a play driver. Name me one winger in his entire career who specifically benefited from playing on PD's line. I think there's a few guys, right?
Alex Chiasson, Andre Kuzmenko.
But Kuzmenko's a big one. And yeah, look at how many he made, $10, $11 million based, yeah, on playing next to him. JT Miller's first season, his breakout year, was alongside Pedersen. His breakout year in the National Hockey League was playing alongside Elias Pedersen.
Toffoli
had a really big stretch on next to him, too. We saw Besser in his first year, too. This year has been a departure, no doubt. Like, Pedersen has been nowhere near, miles away from what he can do. But the reason he got 11.6 and the reason why a lot of us were so high on him, Bick, is because he was doing the things Niels says he hasn't been doing. And he hasn't done it for a while, so people have forgotten about it. But that's what the Canucks also more than anything need, that player to return and be that difference maker who makes other players around him better. And trading him is not easy either. You want to trade him? Go ahead. But you're not getting a star player back in return. What's your best pathway of getting a star player? Trading Pedersen or hoping that he finds his game again? And maybe neither feels good to mm-hmm. you, but this brings us back to the Canucks are in a tough spot. And they need a lot of things to go their way. They need to find some players that can bounce back, and management needs to really earn their money this offseason. They really have to find some solutions in a thin market. It's not going to be easy, but, you know, Rutherford's won Stanley Cups. They like their front office. They believe in themselves. So I hope that belief turns into a really successful offseason.
The evaluation process of what the season was, especially for Elias Pedersen, from the management's point of view, is going to be fascinating. You know, given the context of the coach, and I imagine the coach is going to have a lot of things to say about, hey, what's the direction here of we're going? Is part of my duties here relying on Elias Pedersen? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's going to have an honest conversation of what happened this season. And again, I'll go back to it. Like, they are going to have, if the intention is Elias Pedersen here, some of it is leaping on spec.
Yeah, it is. Vic and Burnaby asked, are the Canucks in a rebuild or a retool? They're not in a rebuild.
They're not in a rebuild.
They're in a retool.
When you have Quinn Hughes, you're not in a rebuild.
Vic, how can you not be in a retool when you're missing at least
– Yeah.
You feel like you're missing two top six players.
Mm-hmm.
You're still away. Maybe you're in the building stage. That's what the management refers to it as building. They're still building. But obviously there's still handiwork being done, mm-hmm. you know. Anything else you want to hit here before we get out, Pick?
Are we not up against the clock?
Yeah, we are. We gotta get out here. I was saying, is there anything else you want to get out?
No, we're good.
Final word. All right. Well, you know what? It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun, as it always is. This has been a difficult game and a season. Like Augusto says, season's been a flop. You know, and I think that's how people feel about it. But, you know, still have 7 games to go after tonight. We'll be here to talk about every single one of them. Bick's back on the People Show tomorrow, 3 to 4. I'm back at Canucks Central 46 with Dan Riccio. Special thanks to Lena. Special thanks to Eddie. All of you for listening, participating, as always, on the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.